Hey, hey, Grant, what are you doing up there on that rack?
Ow! Ooh! Ah! I'm getting prepared for Extended.
No, no, that's not what I mean. aviationextended.co.uk.
Oh!
This is XTP Media.
This is Extended, the ETOPS Aviation Podcast. Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson and welcome to episode 22 of Extended. And joining me today is my co-presenter, editor-in-chief of Aerospace Magazine, Tim Robinson.
Hello, everybody.
Unfortunately, Gareth can't join us this evening, but we do have somebody from Down Under, and it's Grant McCarron from the Plane Crazy Down Under podcast. Grant, welcome to Extended.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be here, and I'll see if I can fill the space that Gareth has left. I don't think I've got his copious knowledge, but I'll give it a whirl.
No, it's great to have you with the wonders of technology. In this episode, we get to look at the news as always. We get to talk to Anthony Lindberg at Basic Six about their award for the best aerospace clothing and what inspired them to make such great T-shirts. We'll have a chat with Grant about the aviation sector down under and their rather unique angle on the topic. And we have a new segment for you, replacing the things you never knew about, called X10D. We'll announce the winners of our giveaways in the Get Involved section, and we'll wrap up with some Promoting Aerospace, where we have some great links for you to follow. Now, the best Get Involved contact each episode will get a copy of Doug Worrell's book about the fear of flying. As Doug said in his interview in our last episode, one in four people has a fear of flying, so you will know someone who has that fear. So if you contact us, and if particularly you use our voice recorder, you will go to the top of the list. The best contact will receive a copy of Doug's book. So do stay in contact with us. Doug, of course, is a pilot for an international airline, and his highly acclaimed book won our award for services to aviation. So lots to get through. But as always, let's get started by looking at what's caught our eye in aerospace news. And so our first story comes from space.com and is their article about space missions to watch in 2014. They focus quite heavily in the article on all the activity for Mars, obviously India, and the Americans have sent stuff there. ESA has, of course, a spaceship there as well. But the one that really caught my eye was the Rosetta. And as we record today, Rosetta, which is a probe that was launched in 2004, 10 years ago, and has been in sleep mode, actually wakes up. So tomorrow, everyone has their fingers crossed for Rosetta to wake up. But the thing that I love about it is they're going to try and land a probe onto a comet, 67P. I don't know what anyone else saw on that list, but that was the one that caught my eye.
Yeah, I mean, the obviously Rosetta's a pretty important mission for Europe to sort of tomorrow. You know, it's got four alarms on, clocks on it, so I recommend a strong dose of caffeine as well to wake it up. Actual rendezvous is in November. Also this year, we've got the Gaia space probe, the Galaxy Mapper, Really fantastic sort of space telescope. It can image a human hair in Paris from London.
Wow.
Incredible sensitivity. And that's going to start giving images back in July, apparently.
Yeah.
But the other sort of space things to watch this year are also in terms of space tourism. Mm-hmm. Virgin Galactic is now doing, they've done a couple more sort of tests. They've done a power test, I think it was the last week. It's another supersonic, third supersonic flight. So they're now moving now down towards the start of operations, which could be sort of later this year. We've also got X-Core Aerospace, which is with a Lynx space plane.
Yeah.
And they're also talking about sort of first flight, sometime this year. So it's now becoming more of a reality, sort of space tourism, and people kind of, this is now on the final lap towards commercial flights.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I'm looking forward to those. I mean, of course, it's something I could never afford at this stage, but who knows, another 5 years when there's a number of groups out there doing it, price may come down, and even little old poor broke me could probably get up there.
Grant, what's the space sector like down under? I know the tracking stations, and there are some pretty impressive telescopes down there. Is there much interest in the space sector down under?
It's there, but I don't know that it grabs everyone's attention as much as we might like. We do have the tracking stations near Canberra, of course, the famous Dish and Parkes out in Western Australia.
Yeah.
We're going to hopefully get the massive telescope array, the Australian component of it, set up. That's the one that they're going to split between Australia and South Africa, I believe it is. Massive radio telescope and so on. It's all going ahead, but it's still not 100% in that funds have to be allocated and politics and all that crud has to align. But we've got the Woomera rocket test range. There's been sounding rockets going out of there for a while, and a few hypersonic projects are based in Australia and or doing research. There was one just recently up in Norway. An Australian team was up there.
Yeah.
Had a couple of hassles with that. So there is space research going on, but it's not as much as I'd like, that's for sure.
Okay, let's move on to something a little bit closer to this side of the world, but further up towards the Arctic. A story that caught my eye was the Russian fleet aviators go back to school, and this is on airheadsfly.com. I think the thing that grabbed me is the technology the Russians are bringing back, the Ilyushin 38, which I've got to say I quite like as an aircraft. I think it's quite good. But they're looking to bring these very old aircraft back into the Northern Fleet to update their Arctic Ocean charts. But apparently they're building up their forces big time, quote unquote, from the article. What's going on up there, Tim?
Well, I mean, Russia is undergoing a modernization of its armed forces. There's no doubt about that. And particularly in aviation, they've gone from a time in the 1990s where I think they bought one fighter plane a year, to putting down pretty substantial orders for helicopters, fighters, and then they're looking at obviously they've got a stealth fighter in development, and now they're looking at a sort of stealth bomber. So I think this sort of fits into their new resurgent Russian air power.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're concentrating on the Arctic. The Arctic is now a place where people are there looking at the resources there. So what's under the sea? People are sort of like trying to put down sort of markers. So I think that this would sort of fit into that sort of scenario. The IL-38 is probably sort of equivalent to the Orion. They haven't got a new P-8. Jet hub subhunter like the Americans have got. So probably what it sounds like is that they are, they're modernizing it. They need to modernize it. It's pretty old as a platform, but putting some new systems in there, updating it, making sure it's all up, more advanced and up to date, and can talk to other platforms.
Yeah,
it's probably a good investment.
I think it's quite an attractive, aircraft actually, but it does look very, very dated. Talking about the Poseidon, how are the Australians doing with? I think they've got
We have it on order.
Oh, the Australians, they are looking for 8 to replace the APC Free Sea Orions, which will retire in about 2017, 2018. So,
yep.
I don't think there's any firm contract for it, but it is in the kind of funding plan going forward, and I've already sort of said it. It's even on the RAAF's website as, you know, future future sort of procurement. So it's pretty solid. In actual fact, they might actually buy more than 8. You know, a lot of water to cover, obviously, down there. But it depends. They might be also buying MQ-4C Tritons, which is the kind of maritime version of the Global Hawk as well. So it depends on a mix with those.
Going to look at using hooking into the BAMS, Broad Area Maritime Surveillance.
That's right, yeah.
And so if the P-8A does come through and go into operation around the 2018-2020 area, then that's the idea of the BAMS hooking in as well, and between a few Poseidons and a bunch of Tritons, they reckon they'll have it covered.
Mm. Another aircraft that we are sharing in terms of aircraft type is the MRTT, the A330, which up here is called the Voyager. And it's seen its first service to Afghanistan, so it's really entrenched now. And becoming a real part of certainly the RAF and the RAAF as well.
Certainly is. We've got 5 of them, mate. Currently online, we're able to refuel with the pods on the wing, but the aerial refueling boom system hasn't been cleared yet, which means that for refueling aircraft such as the Poseidon and the Lightning and the Globemaster and so on, Wedgetail, it's not really able to do it. But fortunately, the Hornets are running with Navy Probe and Drogue, so they're fine.
Yeah.
But they're working to fix that. Has actually done its first VIP mission and took the back in August, took the Prime Minister and entourage over to the United Arab Emirates. So, it's starting to be used for everything. I've been on board one. Steve got to have a flight in one. Last Avalon Air Show, he went up with a gaggle of reporters and got to watch them do some probe and drogue refueling of a classic Hornet.
I mean, in the UK, the RAF should have, you know, under the air tanker contract, should have a 9 aircraft before the end of May. That's the kind of core fleet. So that'll be a real boost in capability, really. And also, on export orders, it's done so well. UEA, obviously Australia, Saudi, next on the line might be Singapore. Singapore's got, I don't know if it's about sort of 6 or 8 KC-135s. Mm-hmm. They're looking to replace them. You know, Airbus has got to put in bids along with Boeing. So it might be interesting to see at the Singapore Air Show next month as to whether we see any sort of movement or any sort of news from that.
And you're going to be out there, Tim, aren't you? So
that's right. I'll be out in Singapore.
Right, excellent. Hopefully we'll get some reports back from that. And sticking with Airbus just then for our last story, wrapping up 2013, Airbus and Boeing fighting it out as always, but one wins on orders, one wins on deliveries.
Yeah, it's the usual sort of wrap up for 2013. You know, what was the year like for the big two airliner manufacturers? Airbus had a record year, 1,503 net orders. Compared to Boeing with 1,355. Airbus backlog now stands at 5,559 aircraft, and Boeing's is on 4,080. That is just staggering.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Absolutely sort of staggering. These guys now, the problem now is not selling them. The problem now is actually building them. Can you build them fast enough? Have you got enough engineers? Have you got the supply chain? That sort of stuff. Boeing, however, did win top spot in production. They delivered 648 aircraft last year compared to Airbus's 626.
Yeah, it always feels like there aren't that many being delivered because, of course, we focused on all the difficulties they were all facing rather than some of these positive things. But that's a phenomenal amount of aircraft coming into the fleets, isn't it? Tim, does that leave any room, particularly, I know we've talked this before, in the production backlog, room for possibly Bombardier or Embraer, certainly on the smaller sizes, to sneak in and do some mopping up?
Well, that's an interesting one. Obviously, Airbus and Boeing in single aisle have both got their Neo and their Max products. Okay, those are re-engined. They're more ultra efficient, and what they both try to do is try to squeeze out any opposition. Basically, if you're going to go up against the big boys, you're going to get thumped in the head. So, you know, Bombardier's had a sort of a tough time trying to sort of drum up orders for the CCs. However, having said that, the problem now is if you're an airline and say you have an old clunky, gas guzzling single aisle type and, your route network supports it, you are going to have to wait a hell of a long time to get, you know, one of Airbus or Boeing's latest products. You know, unless you can jump the queue somehow, and obviously production slots do move forward and people sort of swap them around and airlines do go bust and then they cancel their order and things like that. But that, I think, is perhaps where alternatives, you know, sort of maybe Bombardier or maybe even China and C919 could get in and say, you know, you can have your airline, you can have your airliner in half the time.
Yeah,
you know, you won't have to wait. You could effectively jump the waiting list and have something there that will transport passengers around.
Not to rule out Superjet. I think they've delivered their fourth airframe into service now. Do they have a hope in hell?
It's still a little bit of a. I think they're still a little bit of an uphill battle. I mean, you would have thought that they. Airlines like Aeroflot or some of the Russian carriers would have to toe the party line if you like and have to sort of take Superjet. A lot of them are still
they're buying Western, aren't they?
Yeah, prefer the Western products. Which is maybe a sign of capitalism in Russia. You know, having fully arrived or. Yeah. So there isn't that sort of, I don't think there's that sort of like home market. You can take that sort of home market for granted. This is a Russian airline, you know, Russian built airliner. Therefore, the two must go together. And interestingly, it's there was something in the news last week where there's an archive phone call from JFK to Pan Am. JFK talking about Pan Am, because Pan Am were thinking of buying Concorde.
Yeah.
And this was the day before Kennedy was about to announce the US supersonic rival to Concorde. And Kennedy was going absolutely berserk about this as to why they had betrayed, you know, the US. And it's nothing new, really, is that, you know, the idea that, country X builds has an airline. Country X also has an airliner. It doesn't always match that the two things match up and that they'll buy the home product.
The only place I could see that happening is China, where they've got a bit more of a totalitarian control.
Or they'll buy another manufacturer.
which they'll just let them come in
the GA market, isn't it?
Well, they let them come in, they let them build their aircraft there, and they train up their people and then say, okay, we've had enough, and off they go and do their own thing.
Okay, well, after the break, we're going to come back and talk to Grant about Plane Crazy Down Under.
Blue 5-2, confirm Blue 5-2 are coming.
Blue 5-2 is not airborne. The tanker is Blue 5-1, we're a formation of 3, 1 Delta Charlie 10 and 2 Foxtrot 22s.
So, Grant, thanks very much for joining us on Extended and filling in for Gareth. Really great to have you here. Tell us a little bit about your flying background. I think some people have heard a little recently know that you're what you would describe as a balloonatic. But we talked about the Orion earlier. I think that was something your father flew.
Yes, he did. He was with the New Zealand Air Force, the Royal New Zealand Air Force. Started off going through the pilot course, but they decided to make him air crew instead, and he wound up as a signaler gunner on the Sunderland initially.
Wow.
Spent a number of years in the Pacific firing off Browning 303s and running the radios and being general crew and so on the Sunderlands. And he from there was selected to be part of the first crew the Kiwis sent over to pick up their P3s. So he was the first crew to go to the US, get trained. He spent 6 months over there. Has a lot of very interesting stories from that time.
Yeah.
And one of these days, he and I are going to sit down with some alcohol and a recorder and capture them, even if I'm not allowed to release them until everyone's dead type of thing. Because it's amazing stories. But, so it was in the blood. I believe his great uncle, I believe it was, died test flying Wellingtons in the UK during the war. Then to myself, grew up around Dad being in the Air Force, and I remember he'd left the Air Force but took us kids for a fly with the whole family hopped in a light Cessna and went for a fly with a charter pilot, and kid from the back goes, "Oh, Dad, is this like what you used to fly in the Air Force?" And the guy's like, "Oh, you're ex-Air Force," and apparently he sweated the whole flight. But first memories are sort of like watching the ag planes topping up on Paraparam airstrip. Our house was pretty close to that when Dad was based in Wellington at one point. It's always been there. My sister wound up doing flight attendant, or as I called her, the trolley dolly. So she did that. Mum's been interested in aircraft since way back as well. So it was kind of inevitable I'd wind up as an aviation tragic.
Again, for those who have heard a bit about you, we know you like the unusual gyrocopters, and I know you've been in some aerobatic aircraft as well. Mm-hmm. How in goodness sake did you end up flying balloons?
Given I'd tried a couple of times on my fixed wing, but life got in the way, had a go at gliding when I was at uni, things like that. I lived in Argentina for a while. Was back here in Australia, was married to an Argentine lady, and through marriage and family and so on, am somewhat related partially to an Argentine hot air balloon pilot, and he and his family were coming to Australia. They'd been imported to do some flying over here for a company in Melbourne, and so we got the word he was coming. We were catching up and hanging out, and he also flew in the UK, had flown light aircraft, things like that, was trying to get some money to complete his pilot's license rather and get to commercial and so on, and fell into ballooning, became a balloonatic big time commercially. So one day he calls me up and says, "Hey, do you want to come for a fly?" And I hopped on a commercial flight over Melbourne, loved it. A few months later he calls me up because I was consulting and says, "Hey, we need some help with ground crew. Do you want to come and earn some extra bucks?" So I come along and join in. 6 months later, the company's changed ownership. They're looking for a crew chief. I said, "Hey, I'll look after that. Why not?" It balances nicely with the IT consulting that I was doing a bit here and there. And next thing I know, I'm running stuff on the ground. Got dragged back to IT, but I was off and on commercial crew for a number of years, and wound up with a new company working with them. I'd injured myself away from work and couldn't go out and crew, so they asked if I could run their office. And that was 3 years ago. They had a couple of instructors on board. I cooked a deal with the boss and went off and learnt to fly balloons.
So let's just come back to the program then. How did Plane Crazy Down Under come about?
Funny you should ask. A very similar way to Extended, I believe. we have a common heritage in the Airplane Geeks show over in the US, in that like yourself with Across the Pond, we started producing content for them. Initially, back in the early days, Steve and I were both writing emails with news from Australia in for them. And Courtney Miller said to Steve, "Hey, why don't you start recording this so you can get the accents right and, you know, save us a bit of hassle and things like that." So Steve started doing the audio. I was still sending stuff in via email, and we, along with Steve and Pam, another person who's since joined the team as our videographer, the three of us decided to have a bit of a meet-up, you know, a tweet-up, because we recognized we'd seen each other online as contributing to the Geeks and also to Uncontrolled Airspace and a number of other podcasts in the US. So we thought, hey, let's have a tweet-up. So we got together at the bistro at Moorabbin Airport. We were going to get a photo of the three of us in front of the Moorabbin Tower. And while Mr. Pam is setting up his camera and getting all that ready to go, Steve and I are saying, you know, we should collaborate on this stuff. And Steve's like, yeah, you should join me in the recordings. And so we did. And
was that picture in front of the tower the one that is still on your website? Was your main picture for a long time.
It was our logo for a year or so until we got one done by a friend. So, yeah, it's got a bit of historical record. That was us just getting ready for the photo shoot of the three of us. And, it came from there. So we started producing the Ausdesk. It grew and we were trimming it down. We thought, hey, we could make an episode out of this. So we just started creating it. And at first the Plain Crazy was just a full-length Ausdesk, you might say. and then it went from there.
And it is a very different program. It's got a unique style. You guys have great fun, but on a serious side, some of the material you've produced, I think it's no surprise, some of my favorite stuff was some of the stuff you did recently with the Navy. You get to fly on some great aircraft. You've been to the States. You've been to a lot of air shows. You're on the radio. It really is quite a program.
It has grown, hasn't it? We're in our fifth year, I believe it is, and it's been a lot of doors have opened up, and as the phrase goes, the harder we work, the luckier we get. it's not easy putting everything out, juggling the show, and also as you said, on radio, we've been doing special 1 hour radio shows, and that's on three radio stations now here in Australia, and we're working with some other community stations, and we might see if we can one day get onto the ABC, see if they're looking for more content. And it's a lot of fun. It takes a lot of effort, as you guys would know very well, but it's I like to say we're opinionated enthusiasts, and we've done a lot of hard work and put a lot of stuff into it, and the rewards are starting to flow.
What would Grant? What would you say has been your sort of favourite guests or your favourite episodes that have particularly sort of stood out?
Oh, yeah, okay. There's been a lot. That's a good one. Look, I think having Matt Hall on the show has been pretty good. Ex-RAF wing commander, currently our Red Bull Air Race pilot, which is coming back this year. Yay! So we had only got about 5 episodes out when we thought, hey, we should give him a yell. And it was right when he was getting ready to promote his he was really promoting his Red Bull stuff and all that. So we caught him at the right time, and he said, yeah, I'll come on. We had a great chat with him, and that was where the whole Matt Hall, we're not worthy, came from. it's amazing. He and the other guys from the Air Force that we've had on the show, just really down to earth, fun guys. Some of them have got definitely know what they believe and where they're at, and they're not afraid to tell you that.
I think you was it a Hornet pilot you had on, quite an outspoken chap.
Yeah, that was Serge.
Serge, fantastic. That was really riveting listening to that.
His book is great as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, fantastic book. And my father and I were in hysterics reading that one, and Dad's like, oh my God, it's similar but different to what he went through, Serge was an F-18 pilot, and he was actually the air combat instructor, like a Top Gun, who was training up Matt Hall. And interesting story, the two of them, for Serge's departure flight, instead of doing the high-speed run and all that kind of stuff, he said, one-on-one, him versus Matt, the old dog and the new, so to speak, and they took a pair of Hornets up and just air combat maneuvering, started high, ended low, pretty much out of fuel, and neither of them could get a good shot, but they threw everything they had at it. And just amazing guy. We've had politicians on, we've had airline captains, Deb Wardley, aka Deb Laurie. She was the first female jet captain here in Australia on an airline. She was with Ansett, and she went through absolute hell creating what is now quite common to have ladies flying commercial airliners here in Australia. And chatting with her, it was like, oh my God, she was just like one of the guys. Talking about her third marriage, you know, the joke that you're not a real long-haul international pilot until you're on your third, you know, all this kind of stuff. She's great. We're still in touch with her. It's hard to lock down. I mean, a classic was getting my sister on the show, a bit of nepotism, you know, but we were doing three generations of flight attendant. A lady I knew used to work with Ansett in the 70s, in the glory days back then. My sister had been with Qantas in the 90s, and she had done long haul, wound up doing first class long haul. And then we had a lady from Tray Tables Travels, Amelia, I believe her name. She was on and doing, talking about what it was like now. And so we had the compare and contrast of training and expectations and passengers and operations and all that from then versus now. And it was fantastic.
And when did you kind of when did you realize you know that you'd kind of hit on the right formula? When did you kind of sort of think, well, actually, kind of you know, kind of feedback from some of listeners was actually, you know, sort of, I don't know, was there ever a time when you thought, well, this has passed the sort of tipping point of kind of, wow, we're actually getting out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, the day it got over 300 downloads on the first on the episode that went out, we were like, woohoo, that's pretty good, you know. And then you know, it just settled into a groove. And I mean, now we're getting multiple thousand downloads, and everything's getting a fair bit of feedback from people. And you're at an event, and people come up and go, "Hey, love your show," and all this out of the blue. And was hanging with it took Dad around 3 Squadron at Williamtown because I took one of the Hornet pilots for a balloon flight. And to say thanks, he took my father and I around 3 Squadron and gave us the Hornet tour and all that. And wound up that the squadron leader of 3 Squadron, having a great chat with him just in the ready room, and he loves the show, and we're talking about opportunities for things we can do. And one of the flight lieutenants, flying officers, comes up and goes, "Oh, your Grant, oh mate, love the show." And I'm just gobsmacked, because I'm like, you know, we do it because we love what you guys do, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
fantastic. Great stuff. All right, so just thinking a bit widely, Grant, about sort of aviation news down in your patch of the world. It's quite a bit going on down there, isn't there? What's happening with Qantas? Are they in a bit of a crisis at the moment?
Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb and say a lot of it is self-created crisis, and then a lot of it is also political posturing crisis. My I'm going to alienate a few people. Commentary on this is basically that Qantas are in a disaster because of their own making, because of their current board of directors and their CEO. There's been a lot of disastrous decisions. It all started back in the Dixon days. He correctly saw the writing on the wall that they were going to have to change, they'd have to do new things, they'd have to reduce costs, maybe spin off this Jetstar thing. But instead of being inclusive, he was very exclusive and confrontational, alienated his staff. Now, there's a lot of wonderful people working in Qantas and in Jetstar. They're doing a really great job, going hard, trying to make everything work. But, you know, when you're being bashed around by your CEOs, you're not being paid properly, you know, your environment's just not there. You're not feeling like you're being included. You're being told what has to happen. It's kind of hard to go the extra yard. And so service was falling despite everyone's best efforts. Customers were getting upset, and they were going to the competition. And it just started a downward spiral, and Joyce and Co. have just pushed that down. Jetstar was always just going to be this little domestic thing. Well, now it's the international, so there's a lot of bad blood there because a lot of people feel like they've been lied to. They've made a lot of attempts at setting up Jetstar International and doing end runs around the Qantas Sale Act and various workplace restrictions and unions and things like that. You know, a lot of stuff had to be done. They were going to bleed money and disappear, but I think they've gone about it the wrong way. They're now sitting here going, "Oh, help, it's not a level playing field. We need government support." I personally think what they're trying to do is get money in to whitewash all these disasters that they're having. Jetstar Hong Kong, aircraft sitting on the tarmac, brand new, not being used. because it's not up and running. They're actually now talking about leasing them out or even selling them because they're not running at the moment, and who knows when Jetstar Hong Kong's going to be up and running. The Red Q debacle, that was going to be using single-aisle aircraft in full business first-class recliner seat kind of environment, and it was going to capture the top end of the market in Asia. It was going to be majority controlled by another Asian group, but the profits were going to come back to Qantas to help refloat international. Anyone could see that that was just not going to happen, so Red Q just disappeared, of course, and is now Dead Q. The whole thing about propping up Jetstar, nothing has been proven, but everyone knows the stories on the inside about how everyone is generally saying Qantas gutted Qantas International and to a degree domestic to create and prop up Jetstar. Now, whether that's true or not, I know one way they could do it very, very easily. If you're a headquarters staff member working with like a lawyer or looking at regulatory, HR, all these IT, all these kind of functions, and you're in a company, you're billing your time, you put it down on the codes, you get told, okay, put it on the Qantas International code, and suddenly all these charges go to International, not to Jetstar. Not saying that's what happened, but damn, it's a very easy way to do it, and no amount of forensic analysis on your accounts is going to show that up.
Yeah.
And where do you think, Grant, this is all going? Because I've heard an awful lot of what's been going on there. For me, I find it quite sad that an airline of Qantas's status is in such a scrap that it seems to be. Is it going to turn around? Is it going to come back, or are those days forever gone?
I think those days are forever gone. Qantas is playing on the spirit of Australia, but it's not really that Australian anyhow.
Yeah.
It's got a number of foreign partners and backers and so on, up to the limit that it can within the limitations of the Qantas Sale Act.
Yeah.
My personal belief is that if you want to get a level playing field for Mr. Joyce and co, Jetstar has to be fully isolated and allowed to do what it needs, which I think it could do. It could go quite well, but it needs a bit of work. Qantas Domestic and Qantas International should be spun off into two separate entities. That way, Domestic can be wholly owned within Australia, which then allows, like Virgin Australia, international groups to come in and put a significant amount of money into it. Then the government could prop up International as the Australian flag carrier and guarantee its debts. All that could be done without the fear that money that's going into Qantas mainline suddenly winding up, shoring up disasters that have been done with Jetstar International and Jetstar and so on.
Intriguing times. But we must move on. But before we go, first, of course, we do want to send our very best wishes to Steve. So please, from Gareth, Tim and myself, please send Steve our very, very best for a quick recovery. And of course, all the listeners who do enjoy the work you two guys do as well. But secondly, I think congratulations as well from the extended team, because you've got a big event next month, haven't you? We're lucky to grab you. Pretty busy.
Yeah, it's a Monday morning and I'm feeling, where did my weekend go? Because Kit and I have been doing a lot of planning. Her mum's in town, dropped by to she and her sister and her mum spent a big chunk of the weekend sorting everything out because, hey, a wedding is not an easy thing, is it?
Congratulations.
thank you. Peter, you've just recently been through all that.
Yeah.
So, Kit and I got engaged ages ago.
I can't give you any advice at all, Grant.
We've got it kept pretty tight. We're out in rural New South Wales where some of Kit's family is, because her grandma is turning 90 the day before and everyone's getting together. And I said, well, if everyone's together, why don't we just finally do it? Because the time's never been right. The money's never been there. It's never going to happen. Might as well bite the bullet and make it happen. So a friend of ours is our celebrant. She's coming down. And, we're making a small but fun garden wedding out of it.
Well, wonderful. Well, tell us a little bit about where we can find all about you and Plane Crazy Down Under online.
Yeah, planecrazydownunder.com is, of course, the home site. We're on Twitter as PCDU and we're on Facebook as Plane Crazy Down Under. You can access all those from the home site. Steve's in there. He's He's Steve Vischer on Twitter. I'm Falcon124 on Twitter, and there is a background for that.
You need to go to your blog, which is a very good blog, by the way. Where can we find your blog online?
Thanks, mate. The blog is blog.flymefriendly.com. Fly Me Friendly was just this good idea at the time. It seemed like a fun phrase. And yeah, that's developed and grown for over time. I put a lot of opinionated ranting on there, reviews of podcasts, books, clothing, all sorts of stuff goes on there.
Well, I cannot recommend highly enough Plane Crazy Down Under. It's a fantastic and enjoyable listen. You guys have a great time by the sounds of things making the program, but it is absolutely crammed full of aviation and aerospace content. You don't have to be from down under either to listen and enjoy and understand it.
Yeah, that's something we tried for, was to make sure that it was from overseas, it was promoting what we do here in Australia and good fun to listen to for everyone.
Well, Grant, thanks very much for joining us. Do stick around for a little bit longer. And after this break, we'll talk to Anthony Lindbergh, who's the creative director from Basic Six.
Aviation media has long been the domain of the newspapers and magazines.
Well, not anymore. I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran, and we're bringing aviation right into your radio.
Yes, we're making aviation cool and interesting for everyone.
Hang on, aviation's always been cool. Check this out.
How cool is this?
Crash, turn that down. Here at Plane Crazy Down Under, we've got pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, industry leaders, even politicians dropping by to talk to us about the amazing world of aviation right here in Australia and occasionally New Zealand as well.
Wow, that's cooler than I thought, mate.
Find us at planecrazydownunder.com, on iTunes, or lurking about on other people's podcasts just like this one.
We've got crazy accents and lots of great aviation content.
And we promise not to talk about the cricket.
No, never, not the cricket.
Quack, 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 quack.
What is cricket anyhow?
Something we win a lot. Oh, there
we go.
And welcome to Extended.
Hello, Peter. Thank you very much for having me and Basic Six on Extended.
Well, we're delighted to have you on the show. We love the product, and we were very pleased that you won the Aerospace X Award for Best Aviation Clothing. So congratulations on winning that award.
Thank you very much. Winning the Extended Award has meant a lot to us here at Basic Six and has made 2013 a perfect year.
Right. Okay. Well, we're delighted to have done that. But before we talk about the product and the support that you've been giving to Extended, can you tell us a little bit about your aerospace background?
Yes, of course. Like many of us, I've held a lifelong passion for aviation. I love anything that flies, fixed wing, rotary, a mixture of both, anything but superheroes. I have never worked in the sector, but have been lucky enough to have pilot friends and have managed to get invited for a few flights.
Yeah.
I go to air shows and museums when I can, and I probably have enough books on the subject to worry my family.
So so where did Basic Six come from? Tell us a little bit about how it originated.
Yes, I went on a flight with a friend who shares my love of flight instruments. I think the flight inflated our passions, and we spoke about getting more involved in aerospace, and so Basic Six was born.
Actually, yeah. What was the inspiration of the Basic Six? How did it start?
The inspiration were the flight instruments themselves, the high contrast faces, the white on black. I love the history of the instruments within the cockpit, their implementation and layout, why they came into being, the way they're designed so that in a high-stress environment like the cockpit, the ease of readability to impart the information within seconds to a pilot that can be under a lot of stress fascinates me. From there, we are looking at other details from the world of aviation that we find exciting and fun.
So I noticed one of the designs there is obviously you've got the ejection seat triangle, the classic ejection seat triangle. Also, very interestingly, the Soviet kind of excellent aircraft sort of stamp, which was a mark of kind of quality for, I don't know whether it was ground crews or the pilots during the Cold War.
I think that it is a bit of both. It shows that the aircraft's components are excellent, but that it was also well maintained by the ground crew. So the pilot could see, thanks to this badge on the aircraft's nose, that the he wasn't going to have any problems mechanically with this plane. I know that in other air forces, an aircraft was known either to be perfect or to have reliability issues, and the pilots and ground crew would know that aircraft such and such was a bit stubborn, but I'm not aware of aircraft being awarded excellent badges to wear outside of the Soviet Air Force.
So you're going around air shows looking for kind of odd stencils and kind of interesting markings around the back, where, intake covers and things like that, then, are you?
Yes, lots of inspiration can come from air shows and museums when you are wonderfully immersed in the moment. And the shape of aircraft as a whole can be quite seductive. But it is easy to forget the details that make that shape, and it is the detail inside and out that I enjoy. The cockpit is an area that seems to be overlooked on many occasions in books, which I find odd, as this is where a lot of the action takes place and where the pilot has his or her most memorable experiences. Once you start looking, though, there is detail everywhere and you just can't stop.
Now, Anne, Basic 6 isn't just about T-shirts and clothing, is it? You've got a pretty good blog on your site as well. I love the piece about the English Electric Lightning. What areas are you planning to cover on the blog?
We shall be featuring new products as they come out. We have started an aviation literature section that also lists the aircraft mentioned in each book. There is a section on aviation history and aerospace videos from around the web. We would also like to start a section dedicated to people who work in aerospace, such as you chaps at Extended.
Okay. Now, we're very lucky that Basic 6 have decided to support Extended, and you've got an offer for our listeners, haven't you?
Yes, that's correct. We have 10% off all the products when using the word Extended as the discount code.
Right, okay. So they put Extended into the discount code, yeah?
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Basic 6 supplies apparel to all around the world. This isn't just a UK or European offer, is it? It's listeners can pick this up anywhere in the world.
Yes, we ship globally. We've sent products to diverse places such as Spain and Sweden and Australia and America.
Right, okay. So for all our listeners around the world, this is something you can all participate in, and they are fantastic quality, these T-shirts, and particularly in terms of ethnicity as well and the way that they've been made.
Yes, they carry several ethical standards. The production is low carbon, they belong to the Fairwear Foundation, and they aren't produced with poisons.
Yeah.
Therefore protecting the farmers and manufacturers and us when we wear these garments.
Okay. But they are made here in the UK, aren't they?
Yes, they are made from organically grown Indian cotton and are produced by a company based here in London. The screen printing of the designs on the T-shirts is done by another company in London that is also ethically responsible.
Wonderful.
Can we ask, without giving the game away, what future designs might be coming up or future sort of expansion to the range of clothing?
Yes, well, expansion, I hope to bring out some ladies T-shirts. I think I've had a number of friends who are interested in a women's line. But obviously the designs of T-shirts for ladies are slightly different.
Yeah.
And maybe some
of the colours as well. A three-year-old daughter, I've realised pink's quite an important colour in her life.
Yes.
Not necessarily the most Avgeek-related colour, but certainly one that she'll always wear. So if there's any advice I can give you from that perspective, that's the one.
I will be in touch tomorrow.
But we have a wonderful number of female listeners who I'm sure would be very interested in your design. So well worth progressing with that. Really excited about it.
Yes, I don't want it to be a male-centric area. I think there are a lot of women who are interested, and rightly so, in aviation. And yeah. I would hate to exclude them.
Right, okay. So where can we find Basic 6 online? Where can people go to order, to find the blog, and maybe even follow you on places like Twitter?
Yes, Twitter is the Twitter sign is @Basic 6. The main website is basic6.co.uk, and from there you can find the links to all the other social media networks. We also sell on Amazon, and I believe that if people would like to buy their products, they should do it through the Amazon links on Extended.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to our webpage and click on the Amazon link and you can go through there. But I think for everyone, if you can order it, it is much better through the Basic 6 site.
Yes.
Okay. And anywhere else on the internet we can find you, Ant?
We have a Pinterest account and Facebook. I think it's facebook.com/basic6.
Yeah, I think some of our listeners have been bombarded by me in the last day or two. So you might you might see the numbers going up. But again, not only an apparel site, lots of good AvGeek stuff on both on your Twitter feed and on the Facebook page. So well worth a visit.
Thank you very much.
One final question from me, Ant, is I noticed on your blog there you've got F4 Phantom, a pilot story by Robert Prest, which is absolutely a phenomenal book. But what's your favourite aircraft? That's a quick, easy AvGeek question.
Easy. Well, I love old Soviet, the big Soviet, like the AN, the Antonov 12s, huge, great aircraft,
right,
like that. But I don't know. I like the Buccaneer. Like the Buccaneer. I think that's a fantastic aircraft. Enjoy civil prop liners. There's too many. once you start thinking, they all come flooding into your head.
Yeah.
I mean, the speed and brilliance of the Lightning is just fantastic.
And as I mentioned earlier, you had a video, I think it was a YouTube video link on your site, linking to a publicity movie for the Lightning, which was awesome. Yes. I'd never seen that before.
I found it on YouTube, actually.
Yeah.
I did a link to that, and it's from the 1960s. It was a Ministry of Information film.
We'll put a link in our show notes with this episode to that, because it's well worth a watch for any listeners who, and I know we've got a few who like some of those Cold War jets. So, Ant, thanks very much for joining us. Hopefully we'll get you back on the show sometime to see how things are going.
Thank you very much for having Basic 6 and me on the show. And I hope we can continue this relationship for many years to come.
Excellent stuff. And again, congratulations on the award.
Thank you very much.
Congrats.
Thank you.
So to get one of Basic 6 great T-shirts at a 10% discount, go to basic6.co.uk, and when ordering, use the promo code EXTENDED. Now, I know several other geeks who will want one of these. Neil Braden springs to mind. But they are going off the shelves very quickly. Tim, your favourite actually sold out earlier this month, the Russian design. But moving on to our new segment, it's called X10, our top 10. Tim, tell us all about it.
Yep, well, this is everyone likes lists. And we've got a list for you. We decided to put our heads together and come out with a podcast top trumps for all things aviation. So the idea is we run down the top 10. It could be aircraft, it could be airfields, it could be experiences, it could be spacecraft, and have a discussion about them. So we're going to start off with first one this week, inaugural one, is our top 10 seaplanes. So here goes, countdown. Coming in at number 10, the Caproni Car 60. Now, this is a triplane flying boat with three sets of wings as a 100-passenger passenger seat airliner. You know, completely mad design. No wonder it wasn't going to get very far. And it's included for making the Stop the Pigeons Vulture Squadron designs look sensible. And at number 9, we've got the Shinmarawa US-2. Okay, now those of you thinking that the flying era of the flying boat ended in 1940s, no, not quite. This is a four-engine Japanese search and rescue or maritime patrol aircraft, entered service in 2007. In fact, yep. India is even thinking about buying it. which could make it possibly Japan's first military export in a long while. Number eight, the Felixstowe F2. That's a biplane flying boat from World War One. It played a valuable role in 1970 in keeping watch over the North Sea and the English Channel for enemy U-boats. It's got impressive dazzle camouflage schemes too. Number seven, the Dornier Do 10. Ties in, or the Dornier Do X, if you want to be want to call it that. There are a couple of Dorniers that could have made the list, but for sheer scale, the giant Dornier Do 10 of 1929 is pretty impressive. It was the A380 of its day, with 12 engines carrying 66 passengers and 14 crew on transatlantic flights. But it managed to carry 169 people on one occasion. Madness.
Wow.
Number six, the Martin Seamaster. What could be better than a seaplane but a jet seaplane? So reason the US Navy in the 1950s had created the Martin Seamaster, four-engine seaplane nuclear bomber. It was never put into service because of Polaris and then sort of Trident. But you know, wow, anhedral wing. It's got a V tail, top T tail. It still looks futuristic today.
Yep.
In at number five, the Supermarine S6B, R.J. Mitchell's classic Schneider Trophy racer winner and testbed for the technologies which would lead to the Spitfire. Interestingly, it almost was never entered into the last Schneider Trophy race because of a lack of official funding until a certain Lady Houston came forward with £100,000 of private money to back it. Number four, the Grumman Goose. Hurley versatile aircraft. This to me says 1930s adventurous, lost treasures, wisecracking dames. This is the kind of seaplane that the hero would be flicking the start switches to get the engines running in the lagoon. Just as the volcano is about to erupt. Number three, the Short Sunderland, outstanding maritime patrol aircraft. Entered service 1938, went out of service in RAF colours in 1959. Despite the type's bulky appearance, it was no pushover. The Germans called it the Flying Porcupine due to the defensive machine guns. And a couple of occasions, the Sunderland took on superior numbers of Junkers 88s and still survived. And there was also a civil version. Okay, in at number two, the de Havilland Beaver. Okay, this can obviously be a land plane, but to my mind, a beaver just looks naked without floats. See it and your mind immediately thinks of undiscovered lakes and inlets. Yeah, pure magic. And drum roll for number one, the Consolidated Catalina. Okay, if you're a pedant, you may argue that it's really amphibian, but it's my number one choice because it's longevity. The DC-3, it's a classic design. From Arctic convoys to the Pacific to aerial firefighting to AC rescue, it did everything. And here's an interesting fact. Qantas even flew them on 28 to 32-hour flights over the Indian Ocean in 1943 to 45. 28 hours airborne.
The Order of the Double Sunrise.
That's right, yeah. So what do you think, guys? Any thoughts? Anything I've missed out?
Do you know what? I was actually really, really surprised at how many flying boats there were, and particularly from some of the European nations like France. Monstrous numbers of flying boats that they've designed. I mean, not many were successful, but lots and lots of designs. The only one that I suppose that catches my eye of the, I suppose it's the Cold War, was that Soviet jet. Was it the Exoplane?
No, Ekranoplan, the Caspian Sea Monster. It was a ground effect aircraft that never really got that high, but massive jet engines and flew just above the water in ground effect.
Yeah, that's the one. Very odd thing. Yeah. Seaplanes seem to have bred the unusual, shall we say.
Well, you've got the Beriev BE-200 that is still flying as a water bomber in Russia. That's a jet-powered flying boat.
Yep.
The Catalina was actually produced in flying boat only, not amphibian version initially. But the one that everyone knows is an amphib, like the Mallard. I would have gone for the Mallard over the Goose. I love the Goose, but the Mallard's a little bit more. You've got a little bit more space. You can carry a bit more space to bunk down when you use it as a floating flying home. and a little cheaper to operate than the Albatross, which is the big one.
Yeah. And is there much call down under for seaplanes, Grant?
Oh, yes. Seaplane Pilots Association of Australia. If I had my fixed wing license, the next thing I'd be doing is floating hull. really love it. I quite like the old Lake Buccaneer. it's like the Sunderland. It just stooges along. What could you say? A floating hull, it combines yachting with flying. So instead of having a hole in the water you throw money into, or a hole in the air that you throw money into, you've got both that you throw more money into. How can you go wrong?
There's
a lot of seaplane pilots down here, a lot of floating hull stuff, a lot of LSA seaplane work going on. It's a good thing. We've got a lot of lakes and rivers that we can use. And, yeah, I'd love to have one.
Well, you need to tell us what your top 10 seaplanes are. So get over to get involved at aviationextended.co.uk. Send us an email or leave us a voice message on our SpeakPipe on the website. You won't squeeze them onto Twitter, I don't think, but you might be able to get them on a list on our Facebook page. So let us know what you think about Tim's list. Challenge it, edit it, amend it, or come up with your own.
Oh, you got ESPN, eh? There you go. 269 Mike Juliet. Cleared to Papa India Alpha via radar vectors direct. Maintain 2,000, expect 400 in 10 minutes. Departure frequency 1194. Squawk 0716. Where is that, by the way?
That's Gary, Illinois. We're cleared. Radar vectors direct to 40 and 10, 194, 0716. Appreciate it.
No problem. Just enjoy that clearance while you can, because you know what? It's probably a big fat lie. You are dealing with Jacksonville Center. They never do anything direct.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
And so, to the get involved and feedback section of the show. First, we want to announce the winners of our giveaways in our 12 Days of Christmas. Day 12, help in the aviation industry. Toby Kimmings from West Sussex wins the copy of Dragons of Thin Air by Doug Worrell. Toby's a new listener and is flying with his mother in October, and both of them will hopefully benefit from Doug's advice. Day 11 was the best restoration project, and Glenn Towler from Wellington in New Zealand has won the Lusty Lindy giveaway. So we're not quite sure what it is yet, Glenn, but we're on to the team there, and they've got your details, so hopefully you'll get something in the post soon.
Go, Glenn.
Woo-hoo. Yes. Popular man, Glenn. Thanks for supporting all of the portfolio of shows in the airplanegeeks.net. portfolio. And day 9 was, of course, the best book, and Neil Braden wins the signed copy of the 60th anniversary of the Vulcan. Neil, who's currently in Oregon, will be back in Europe in the summer, so well done, Neil. You are going to absolutely love that book. Day 4 was best aerospace clothing. We heard from Anthony Lindberg earlier, Basic 6, and Mark Mattox has won the Basic 6 t-shirt. Mark, we don't seem to have your address, so if you want it, you're going to need to contact us quickly, because if you don't get your address in, we are going to steal it and give it away to somebody else.
Oh, I thought it was going to Mark Maddox, care of Grant McCarran in Australia.
It will be if he doesn't claim it very soon. Day 3 is the best family day out, and Stephen Taylor, you win the family day out to AeroVenture, the South Yorkshire Air Museum. So well done, Stephen. And day 1 was the best aerospace product, and of course it was the Big Book of Flight, and Josef Vybrel from Ostrava in the Czech Republic wins that. And Josef, for all his hard work, he liked every one of our 12-day guests on Twitter and Facebook. So well done there. Of course, you've got Roland White's book, which you'll have a signed copy of, winging your way to you soon. So well done, everyone. Thanks for playing a part in that. And we'll move over to emails. We got an email from Bob Dennis. Said, just thought you deserve a large pat on the back for episode 20. Listener from day one and a bit of a space lover. This has to be the best. Interesting, informative, and great interviews. Regards, Bob. So thank you very much, Bob. We do love our space episodes. But just to follow up on something that came out of that, we talked a lot about Soyuz during that episode. There's a fantastic YouTube video, which we'll put a link to the show notes in, all about how Soyuz undocks and re-enters the atmosphere. Great video, well worth a watch. Thank you to Colin Sweetman, who gave us a mention on flyer.co.uk on the forums there, recommending good podcasts. And there was also a recommendation for PCDU as well. So couldn't have timed that one better. Now, Colin is a part owner of a classic 64 Piper Cherokee, and he's based at Old Warden. He says there are two hangars hidden away from the Shuttleworth collection with a number of interesting privately owned aircraft there. They have Wing Commander Ken Wallace's collection of autogyros tucked away for safekeeping in the hangars. So quite some special stuff there. But thank you, Colin, for doing that. Graham Holford contacted us, and he told us all about the return of Tracy Curtis Taylor, of course, on that epic journey back from Cape Town. Now, Tracy, of course, was a guest a few episodes ago, and she was recreating the 1928 flight by Mary Heath, who was the first woman to hold a commercial flying license in Britain. Now, Tracy flew 9,825 miles and made 38 legs. Now, for those of you who followed her, of course, she was in the Boeing Stearman, an absolutely gorgeous aircraft. She did have some challenges along the way. She also had some wonderful sights, great photographs, and we do expect that there will be a film made of the trip. So as soon as we know a little bit more about that, we will, of course, get links to that for you. But Graham did attend the return of Tracy at Goodwood on a terrible, terrible day, and took some photos, which he's agreed we can share. So we'll get those up on the Facebook page. Over to Twitter. Unfortunately, we had so much traffic on Twitter over the past month or so that I can't run through it all. One that popped out was from Colin, who we mentioned earlier, who really, really enjoyed it, but mentioned Amy, who, of course, was our guest. Amy Parkin was our guest on the last show, and also Mrs. G, who introduced the show, Claire Grattan. So thank you very much, Claire and Amy, for your part in those episodes. And over to Facebook, and I missed one from Joseph Chung, who, of course, is a listener and a great contributor to the show. He suggested that he's not much of a Christmas fan, and it would be great to cheer him up on Christmas Day to have a special extended edition full of funny outtakes from during the year. So how about it, release it on Christmas Day too. I didn't get that, Joe, so I'm really sorry. If there's enough interest, we'll stitch together all the outtakes if that tickles your fancy, so let us know.
That, or you could just listen to Plane Crazy Down Under. It's just one giant outtake, but anyhow.
Yes, we did learn a lot from you guys, but anyway, moving on. Paul McConnon, just finished the episode this morning on the way to work. Good work. Merry Christmas to all. And also on the Facebook page, we've been sharing some interesting links, and one that was my favorite from Aviation Pictures videos and news was the wheel well of a Boeing 737, which I've got to say is just an awesome photo. We'll put it in the show notes. We'll link it back to Facebook. Well worth a visit if you haven't seen this picture, how complicated the inside of a wheel well actually is.
Yeah, and the fun bit is that, guess what? Inside the wedge tail looks just like that.
Yeah, it really is complicated in there. So well worth a look. But anyway, thank you for everyone who contacted us over the last month or so. And as I said, in the future shows, we will be giving away a copy of Doug's book. Now, for this episode, the copy of Doug's book will go to Paul McConnon. So, Paul, do send in your address to us at x10d@mail.com, and we'll get that off to you.
Fasten your seats and buckle on in. We'd sure appreciate it. We'll be down in Baltimore into the gate by 40 after local time. That'll be 4:40 p.m. We do apologize for our tardiness, so if you'll come back and see us again on another Southwest Airlines flight, hopefully we can make it up to you. It's 48 degrees there, and gusting winds out of the north also, just like Manchester, 16 miles an hour. Bravo, Southwest. You got to make it on time next time. Woo!
Okay, over to promoting aerospace, where we will help to promote your website and your blog. If you do put a link to the show and our logo, we will very kindly put a slot in this segment for you. So do send us those links. A couple of links we did want to promote in here, though. Our good friend of the show, Matt Folkus, has some fantastic aviation book reviews in his January book review. So do go over there and check that out. We'll put a link in the show notes. David Vanderhoof, of course, our good friend and historian from the Airplane Geeks, he shared a link on celebrities you didn't know were pilots. So if you thought you knew all of them, and the obvious ones, the John Travoltas are in there, but there are some unusual ones as well. Go over and check that out. And then a great little graphic from the Runway Girl Network is 60 Seconds in Aviation, showing the human side of air transport, and breaks down everything that happens in aviation around the world in a 60-second slot. So do check that out. But before we go, we do have a pods challenge, of course. That's from Amy Parkin. And listen to this.
Hi, Pete here from Tim. It's Amy. I finally thought of a new pods challenge for you guys. It was really hard to beat the last one, but I finally thought of one over Christmas, and I decided that this time I would ask you, if you could have any aerobatic display team, what would be your team name, and what aircraft / how many aircraft would you use? I hope that's a good enough question. Like I said, it was really hard to beat the last one. I can't wait to hear all your answers, and I can't wait to do more Pods Challenge for 2014. Bye!
Okay, guys, there's your challenge. If you had an aerobatic team, what would the aircraft be? What would the name of the team be? And how many aircraft would you have in it?
Whoa, right, okay. Oh, this is a good one, Amy. Number one... So this is money, no object, yep. Era, no object.
Wow. I'd have to say I'd want at least six aircraft, so you could have opposing solos keeping the crowd entertained while the other four regroup, because there's always got to be something happening.
Good shout. The thing is, I always want to put my favourite aircraft and not the most practical or aerobatic ones. And when I heard this, I just thought I'd love to see some Tomcats up in formation, but I just don't think they'd be that versatile. But I'd just love to see six of them. Mm-hmm. That was for me. Yeah. For a name, I'll have to think of something. I can't think of a good name.
I don't know. I mean, I'm tempted for that for 11 English Electric Lightnings. Okay. And obviously you've had the Hunters was the Black Arrows, you got the Red Arrows, so it'd have to be something arrows, wouldn't it? It'd have to be a colour in arrows. Silver Arrows?
The Flash Arrows?
Yeah. Flash arrows. Have to have them all kind of bare metal. Imagine that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
11,
yeah.
11 lightnings just going vertical on a summer's day. Whoa.
Well, mention the aerobatics box is about 3 miles cubed.
Yes.
while the lightning's still in my mind, of course, we will put a link to the lightning video that Anthony talked about in the Basic Six interview, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, Grant, anything else to add to that?
I'm gobsmacked. I mean,
she's got us here, I think. I think Amy's
great.
Got us.
We could just imagine a bunch of balloons doing formation aerobatics. Not. I don't know. I'd like to see...
Zeppelin display team. Imagine that.
Display box.
Synchro cross.
And they have to set this up 3 days beforehand. Look, you know, I'd love to see maybe like a bunch of rigid rotor helicopters doing formation aerobatics where they can loop and so on. You'd have to clone off, I believe, the gentleman who does the aerobatic helicopter maneuvers for the Red Bull. But, you know, you could call it Rotors Gone Wild or something.
Yeah, well, Amy, I think you might have stumped us here. So, again, let's get your ideas on the Facebook page, Twitter, hashtag Pods Challenge, or email us or use our voice pipe. So, before we go, Tim, do you have an aerospace topic you'd like to promote?
Yeah, I've got an aerospace topic. It's a sort of topical this year. It's also got a bit of a down under connection. What I'd like to promote for this episode is the World One Aviation Heritage Trust, which is UK based, and it's working with the Lord of the Rings director, Hobbit director, Sir Peter Jackson's World One Aircraft Collection in New Zealand, to bring some of these iconic aircraft replicas to the UK to display them and tell them the story of the airmen of World War One. You can find them on World War One Aviation Heritage Trust.co.uk. And whatever your thoughts on World War One, you know, the Great War, it's surely an appropriate way to remember the sacrifices is by actually have the aircraft sort of flying in the skies so people can remember them and see, you know, what fragile machines they were. So this is a really good thing to sort of get behind and support, you know, the World War One Aviation Heritage Trust. And I, for one, can't wait to, you know, if you can just sort of see a few of this magnificent collection that is usually on the wrong side of the world for you know, some of us, you know, to see it flying in UK skies, that would be absolutely fantastic.
And Grant, have you got anything you would like to promote?
Well, the big thing for us this year in and around the centenary of the World War One and armistice and so on. Actually, no, it wasn't armistice. It was the start of it, wasn't it? We've got... the centenary of Australian military aviation, because it's been 100 years this year since we formed what became the Royal Australian Air Force. So that's a full-on weekend air show at Point Cook, the birthplace of the Australian Armed Air Force, it's also the oldest continuously running airport in Australia and I believe the world in terms of being a military base and so on. It's always been a military base and... it's right up there in the top 5 or 10, that's for sure. So that's a big one coming up this year for Australia.
Right, okay. And we'll put links to all of those in the show notes. So it's time to wrap up for this episode. A couple of reminders. Please do go and rate us on iTunes. That way more people get to hear about the show and it keeps us up there on the rankings. So please, if you haven't done that, do that for us. Also, if you're buying anything online, particularly through Amazon, use the link on our website. Costs you nothing other than a few seconds to click through. There are no differences other than you going directly to Amazon. So please do give us a little bit of a kickback from that. We'd like to thank White Hart, Sam, Peter Dixon for their contribution to the show. And of course, just going back to the Christmas period, to congratulate all the winners of the Aerospace X Awards. We did think that that was a great initiative. We've had some fantastic feedback, both from those who won awards and from people congratulating them. It will be something that we run annually, so later on in the year we'll talk to you about how you can nominate for those awards. Grant, we'd love to thank you for joining us today. Can we just get a little reminder of where to find you online?
You can find me at playingcrazydownunder.com, PCDU on Twitter, playingcrazydownunder on Facebook, and you can also find my personal Twitter is falcon124, and of course blog.flymefriendly.com.
And Tim, where can we find you online?
Yep, you can find the website at www.aerosociety.com, or I'm active on Twitter at RESTimR.
And you can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter and at xtpmedia.co.uk, as well as facebook.com/xtpmedia. Of course, you can find all our show notes for the episode, along with the pictures and links, at our website, which is aviation-extended.co.uk, and of course our Facebook page, which is Aviation Extended, all one word. If you don't follow us on Twitter, you can do, and we're at Aviation Extended, all one word. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. And with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Grant McCarron.
G'day, goodbye, and have a great time.
And it's goodbye from Tim Robinson.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. And remember to stay tuned into this frequency. Extended, the ETOPS aerospace program and Europe's premier aerospace radio station.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme. Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
Nicely done.
Thanks. It's a script. I'd love to say I was doing it off the cuff, but
this is off the cuff every week.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Yeah, I believe. Dang it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you out there.
Off the top of my head, I'm not.
Was it really an F-16? F-16. Brain's kicked out.
So, shall I talk about the designs or
yeah, just do you want me to ask the question again?
Yes, please.
So, Anthony, before we get on to... now, I've lost my train. T-shirt. So, if you're interested, let us know. And if there's enough interest, we'll get some printed up.
Really need a sort of like a Radio 1 type jingle or something to do the countdown, but...
Yeah. No, I thought that was well done. Good work, yeah. Tim. Not just because four of mine were on your list either.
No, that was awesome. I'm looking forward to the next one now already, actually.
Just think of one for next one, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So, challenge.
Can't remember what I've written here now, guys. Sorry, bear with me. Leave my own notes.
You weren't following the script?
Yeah, I've got it, but I'm running out. Running out of breath. challenge to you from Amy Parkin. So let me plug back in.
Stand by.
That's good.
If you don't follow us on Twitter, oh dear, that'll be an outtake. If you don't
follow us on Twitter. I can see a new website coming up for adult comps.
It was fun. It's always good to have somebody who knows their stuff to come in and give us a gentle prod. So really.
And in their absence, I'll sit in.
Extend it.
is XTP Media.